Friday, August 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Republican candidates for the U.S. presidency debate in Cleveland. ASEAN foreign ministers express concerns about increased tensions in the South China Sea.
There was tremendous wrangling about what to say because China did not want this type of tough language. And
rapper Dr. Dre releases what he says will be his final album. It's all ahead. The top 10 Republican U.S. presidential candidates officially launched the 2016 campaign season with their first debate in Cleveland, Ohio. Prior to the main debate event, the seven other Republican contenders who did not make the cut took to the stage in Cleveland for what some call the happy hour debate or the undercard. International Edition Steve Norman spoke with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone shortly after the second debate concluded.
There were two debates. Now, is that normal to have two separate debates?
No, because it's not normal to have 17 candidates for one party. So you had the top 10, according to polls, in the main debate. An earlier debate featured the other seven.
Mm-hmm. 17 altogether. Just quickly, who were the big ones?
A lot of focus was on Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He's leading in the polls. He's sort of come out of nowhere. He's a non-politician. And that was on display during the debate for both good and bad, I'd say. Trump was combative. He would respond to attacks in the debate and to criticisms. So he took no quarter there. At the same time, I just happened to catch some of the voters reacting on the Fox News channel, which carried the debate afterward. And some of them weren't too happy with Mr. Trump. They thought his tone was a little mean, and also that he was evasive on some issues. And this is where we're getting into the sort of sifting of the candidates now, Steve, where they're going to be asked specific questions, and how they respond will have an impact. So we had Trump, but we had nine other people in there as well.
I know when he's out on the road campaigning before people, he's been to Europe. He's all over the place. The guy makes quite an impact, and a social media impact. The buzz around him, positive and negative, is great.
Yeah, and I think that'll continue with the debate. So that'll keep him in the running. He did not self-destruct, as some people might have been expecting. But we had other people in there as well. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush defending his views on immigration. He's a more moderate view than many of the Republicans. You had Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker arguing that he's one of the true conservatives in the race and should be taken seriously by Republican voters. You had also just a slew of candidates criticizing the Obama administration and its foreign policy, particularly the recently agreed to Iran nuclear deal, as well as their handling of trying to counter the Islamic State in the Middle East. So there was a lot of criticism of the Obama administration and of Hillary Clinton, a lot of attempts to tie her to President Obama, and of course she was his Secretary of State.
Right. So were they at all saying what they would do differently than what the Democrats have
in
done?
In some cases, yes. For example, a couple of them said one of the first things they'd do if they were elected is to tear up that Iran nuclear deal.
Whoa.
So they made a pretty strong statement on that. Others talked, Lindsey Graham in the earlier debate said, people should understand if he's elected, he'll be sending more troops to the Middle East, both to Iraq and to Syria. So there's quite a variety of views. But then you had Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who got into an argument with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie over the balance between protecting the country from terrorism here at home and also civil liberties.
Yeah.
And Rand Paul's been a big outspoken, critic of too much leaning toward, terrorism laws and not enough, credence to civil liberties. So there were some real flashpoints in the debates.
He also has some consider a controversial point of view. He's upset that we borrow money than to give it back to countries who don't like us.
Oh, that's right. And, Donald Trump makes a big point about China and Russia, and one of his big things is, as a businessman, he's going to make much better deals. He did come under questioning, though, for four of his companies having gone bankrupt. He defended himself in his aggressive fashion. We're going to see more of that, I think. Not a lot of clarity out of this debate right now. We've got a very crowded field. Trump's ahead, but it's not by a lot, And I think a lot of other people now are going to sort of get ready to take him on in a more aggressive way.
And when the pundits all gather together and look back at this thing, will they say there was a clear winner?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think we're closer to the beginning than we are the end of this process, so we got a long way to go.
Very long way. Like the election is how many months away?
15.
15. How about that?
That's Steve Norman. He was speaking with national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, the Republican debate was an event highly anticipated and closely monitored by many conservative voters across Cleveland. VOA's Kane Faraba reports.
Among the media tents and button vendors camped outside the arena was independent voter John Scheman, desperate to get in.
In a place that holds over 20,000, they only have 4,500 tickets.
And for one of Cleveland's biggest nights on the political stage, Scheman could not score one of those tickets. He wasn't alone. Across the city, thousands without access to the main debate venue sought the company of fellow conservative voters at one of several debate watch parties.
And the moment of truth has arrived. Welcome.
Joyce Clark, who traveled from Alabama, also couldn't get a ticket into the venue. She watched her favorite candidate, Dr. Ben Carson, take the stage from afar.
I think he's quite handicapped because of the lack of the questions that he's been given.
Some of the biggest laughs and biggest applause of the night was in response to comments made by businessman Donald Trump, something that troubled Clark.
I think it's a Trump-Bush show instead of a fair debate.
It's good television, and it's also a good discussion of policy.
Ian Walters is with the American Conservative Union, which hosted one of the biggest watch parties at the House of Blues in downtown Cleveland. Not only were there TVs and a big screen live projection of the debates, but the venue stage gave several candidates not appearing during the main event a chance to connect with voters. Joyce Clark was having a hard time accepting that some candidates didn't get invited to participate in the main event, but Donald Trump did.
I can't believe that that many people would consider that he would be the leader of the world.
I think he's a bomb thrower, but I think in a good way.
With such a large field of candidates, Scheman is skeptical about the motives of many of those participating in the debates.
Probably half of them are just doing it for the notoriety. To maybe do something in 4-8 years and maybe be a VP pick or in a cabinet or something, you know.
One debate is not going to help Scheman make up his mind. He wants to see who stays in the race for the next several debates before he commits his vote to a candidate. Kane Faraba, VOA News, Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Well, Andrew, what about that debate?
Well, it was certainly trending all through the day yesterday and into the night, and it was very interesting because they do these focus groups after the debate, and they ask people, you know, what did you think? They have dials they give them during the debate. They turn either positive or negative. And social media is kind of an ongoing kind of living focus group. You have people tweeting out as soon as they like lines saying, oh, that's a great line, or, oh, they need to talk about this. Some of the key moments you just heard in those reports, the start of the debate, they asked, if you don't win the nomination, would you run as a third-party candidate? And Donald Trump was the only one to raise his hand. Well, that, you know, in the first question of the debate, set off a firestorm on social media, people saying, well, that's done for Trump. He's out. Nobody's going to support him now. Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, and Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky, had a back and forth, a heated exchange on NSA spying and tapping phone records. Rand Paul is a big opponent of that. And that also set off a social media firestorm. A lot of people thrilled that he's bringing that issue up, something that maybe hasn't been talked about a lot in the Republican field. But a lot of people on social media, too, saying Megyn Kelly was a big winner in the debate. She was the host, one of the three hosts who were asking questions in the debate. Asked some very tough questions. She asked Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, brother of George W. Bush and son of George H.W. Bush, said, how do you tell people that your brother's war was a mistake? He said the Iraq war he thinks now is a mistake. He said, how do you tell the families of the soldiers that went over there to fight that was a mistake? A lot of people talking about that on social media. And now we see the memes as well. There's a lot of, you know, little videos and of Trump. There was one I saw where it just goes, Trump, 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 Trump. And that's it. This was the topic of the debate. Interestingly, while this was going on, Hillary Clinton was doing a bit of rebuttal. She was tweeting things out from her account as the candidates were discussing issues with her positions, contrary to theirs. And then the social media kind of blowing up overnight as she posted a picture. There's a picture of her going around with Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. So while the Republicans were out in Cleveland debating. She was at a fundraiser with them.
Not her usual companions, I would think.
No, but, you know, maybe trying to appeal to some young people with that. So the debate dominating last night, but also, as we talked about yesterday, hashtag John Voyage, the end of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Another star-studded show, John Kerry, Hillary Clinton making an appearance, John McCain, Wolf Blitzer from CNN, a lot of people, and then all the correspondents coming back, some big names, Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, and the show closing out with Bruce Springsteen. So a lot of buzz about that on social media as well. A lot of people sharing clips of that today and sharing their fond memories of Jon Stewart as his past 16 years on the show come to an end.
Yeah, a lot going on there. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A new study shows that the world's glaciers are melting faster than ever. An international team of researchers led by the World Glacier Monitoring Service at the University of Zurich have completed a comprehensive analysis of data on global glacial changes for the last 120 years. The study compared observations made from 2001 to 2010 to data gathered in the past by on-site, airborne, and satellite methods. The researchers find that glaciers today are losing between 0.5 to 1 meter of ice thickness each year. That is between 2 and 3 times more than the amount of glacial ice lost on average over the 20th century. The researchers say that for the time span observed, the rate of global glacier melt is unprecedented. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, rapper Dr. Dre releases a new album. Southeast Asian foreign ministers say land reclamation in the South China Sea has increased tensions in the region. In their annual communique, the group known as ASEAN expressed serious concerns about China's construction work, noting some ministers are worried the activities may undermine peace, security, and stability in the South China Sea. The document, issued 2 days after the ministers' formal session in the Malaysian capital, also declared that China and ASEAN countries will proceed to the next stage of consultations on a binding code of conduct for behavior at sea. I spoke with VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman. What are some of the concerns that they discussed in their final statement?
Well, I think what came out in the statement was quite a bit different than what was going on behind closed doors, and it took a couple of days for this statement to come out. There was tremendous wrangling about what to say because China did not want this type of tough language and was relying on its friendly ASEAN members. China's not a member. Countries such as Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar to sort of push back against any tough language in this communique. But what finally came out was a phrase saying that the reclamation work has eroded trust and confidence, increased tensions, and may undermine peace, security, and stability in the South China Sea. But it did not single out China. However, by ASEAN standards, historically, this is relatively tough language.
And apparently China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, had during the meetings, he rejected territorial claims from both Japan and the Philippines to parts of the South China Sea.
Right, because China claims most of the sea. It says this is not up for debate. The Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, Taiwan, and Brunei all have overlapping claims. And beyond just the issue of territory, we're talking about an area where $5 trillion in trade passes through every year. So there is a lot of at stake with these waters.
So going out of this meeting, where does the situation now stand in regard to the South China Sea?
Well, I don't know if we're really going to see much pushed by ASEAN, although there is talk now that they'll go ahead with further discussions about a code of conduct in the South China Sea, and that has been talked about for many, many years. China has been using slightly softer rhetoric, but at the same time, it's been doing this reclamation work, which it now says that the reclamation is completed, although the Secretary of State Kerry said he's remains to be seen if that's really true, and we expect that there will be continuing construction going on some of these islands that they're on. And we also have the Philippines in Vietnam getting quite upset about what the Chinese are doing, and the Secretary of State is in Vietnam today discussing this. And one of the reasons I think we're seeing a closer relationship developing between countries such as the Philippines and Vietnam is because of their concerns about a rising China, especially in the South China Sea.
I know Kerry is in Vietnam today, and I believe he had mentioned, he said the U.S. continues to be concerned about some of Vietnam's human rights situation.
Absolutely. He says that is what is keeping Vietnam and the United States from enjoying a full partnership. But Vietnam and the United States now find themselves allied in other important ways, not only with their mutual concerns about a rising China, but also Vietnam is involved in these talks to create the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So there's not only concerns about human rights playing into to this relationship, but obviously the United States still does have strong concerns and is really hoping that Vietnam will move along. However, we're not seeing really any signs of that from the Vietnamese, the ruling communists. One of their big figures who recently visited Washington said the differences between Washington and Hanoi on human rights should not be allowed to obstruct a deepening of the relationship.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Steve.
Certainly. Anytime.
That's VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. It's been 16 years since rapper and entrepreneur Dr. Dre released a solo album. Now he's out with what he says will be his final CD. Proceeds from Compton will go to benefit a performance arts space in Los Angeles. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA music host Ray McDonald about the CD and why it took so many years to be released.
Dr. Dre has been working on an album called Detox for many, many years. And this was sort of the holy grail of hip-hop. People were waiting and waiting and waiting for Detox to appear. And now we find that Dr. Dre is coming out with an album, but it's not Detox. It's called Compton, a soundtrack by Dr. Dre. It was announced Thursday on Zane Lowe's Beats One radio show, and the album officially premiered Thursday night, and it hit the market on Friday.
Now, he is known for working with other people. He's worked with Snoop Dogg. Obviously, he worked with N.W.A. He worked with Eminem. He's been producing a lot of people, in addition to coming up with the Beats headphone or sound system line.
He's been busy.
So he has been busy. It's just we haven't heard him solo since the album 2001, which was released in 1999.
Well, Dre has his own radio show on Beats One. It's called The Pharmacy. And he says that he was working on Detox for years and years, but he said it wasn't good. He didn't like it. He knew that the fans wouldn't like it. So he basically abandoned that project, brought together a lot of established stars and some newcomers, too, and he made Compton a soundtrack.
who's featured on this CD?
Eminem, of course. Kendrick Lamar, Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, The Game, Exhibit. They're some of the established stars. And then he works with some new artists like King Mez and Justice. And Dre says he wrote most of the lyrics for the album with those two. So they're newcomers, and they're going to be getting a lot of great publicity from this album.
Mm, so it's going to establish their cred by being with him, and it's also going to give us a chance to hear Dr. Dre again.
For the last time, he says this is going to be his grand finale.
Wow, okay. So you might have an opinion on this. You can send us a tweet. It's VOA underscore music and VOA underscore IE. Those are our Twitter handles. And, of course, you can listen for Ray's show. That's the top 5 hits and the top 20 hits of the week. You can download that at www.voanews.com.
That is the song Compton by Dr. Dre. And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In September, the U.S. Congress will vote on whether or not to disapprove the comprehensive nuclear accord agreed to last month by the P5 plus one countries and Iran. In a speech in Washington defending the deal, President Barack Obama was blunt.
The choice we face is ultimately between diplomacy or some form of war. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not 3 months from now, but soon.
Mr. Obama added that, ironically, military action would be far less effective than this deal in preventing Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
Every estimate, including those from Israeli analysts, suggests military action would only set back Iran's program by a few years at best, which is a fraction of the limitations imposed by this deal.
Mr. Obama called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, the strongest nonproliferation agreement ever negotiated, permanently prohibiting Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon by verifiably cutting off all Iran's pathways to a bomb, thereby securing one of the U.S.'s critical security objectives by means of hard, painstaking diplomacy. President Obama noted that all problems with Iran are not solved by the nuclear accord.
The ruling regime is dangerous and it is repressive. We will continue to have sanctions in place on Iran's support for terrorism and violation of human rights. We will continue to insist upon the release of Americans detained unjustly.
Mr. Obama decried the rhetoric and behavior emanating from some parts of Iran, calling it offensive and incendiary. But he said that superpowers should not act impulsively in response to taunts or even provocations that can be addressed short of war. Just because Iranian hardliners chant death to America, he said, does not mean that's what all Iranians believe.
The majority of the Iranian people have powerful incentives to urge their government to move in a different, less provocative direction. Incentives that are strengthened by this deal. We should offer them that chance. We should give them that opportunity.
It's not guaranteed to succeed, said President Obama. But if they take it, that would be good for Iran. It would be good for the United States. It would be good for a region that has known too much conflict. It would be good for the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.